The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Tim Estes. He's a chairman and CEO of a company called Digital Reasoning. Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Doing great, John.
Hey, we weren't doing much reasoning a few minutes ago. We're doing a little bit of laughing here.
Yeah.
This is a rather serious topic. We're going to keep it kind of lighthearted and light. What we're going to talk about is the proliferation of data that many federal agencies have. They are swimming in data. It's a fire hose of data. It's great to have all this big data, but you got to scratch your head and go, well now what? And so Tim is going to answer the question that all my listeners have is, okay, we got these megabytes, we got these maybe petabytes and bigger, fancier words than that. Now, what do you do with all this stuff? How do you make sense of it? And that is the whole focus behind the company of Digital Reasoning. But before we begin, Tim, tell us about your background, how you wound up working for Digital Reasoning, please.
Well, I work for it because I started it. I picked this up and started the company right after my third year at UVA. So proud Wahoo over here. And basically got pulled in to the government intelligence area post 9/11 very early, working on some very interesting problems around lots and lots of textual data that analysts didn't have time to read. And looking in that data across the huge volumes with machines and algorithms so that they could figure out things like aliases or cover terms, basically where a system could see patterns in language that no human can see because no human ever reads a billion documents or a million even for that matter.
Yeah.
So we spent years working on that, a lot of research, some pretty broad patents granted around that area. And we ended up getting pulled in. And then a few years later into that process, the intelligence community's venture capital fund, InQtel, made an investment. And then we've been working with their partners since to put it in the right use cases so that it can come and support the analysts today. Basically, a machine that reads all the things that you should read, not to tell you what the truth is, because machines aren't there yet, but to tell you what's important. So with the very limited amount of time that you have as an analyst, as a warfighter, that you get the stuff you need to spend your time on today. I think that's the key thing is machines have to be in the triage process when the data becomes overwhelming. There's just no other solution.
My wife and I just saw that movie about Alan Turing. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They had lots and lots of information and they had to figure it out.
Yeah.
And what Alan said was, maybe we can have a cue the machine.
Yeah, machine to fight the machine.
And it took very bright people that could think outside the box and different types of thinking. People could solve crossword puzzles in order to solve it. And it's a wonderful movie for people to see. And that was a challenge, 50, 60 years ago. Same challenge today.
It is. And there's an irony. And I promise I won't go into philosophy. We were joking about this before the interview. But Turing was actually taught by a philosopher named Ludwig Wittgenstein. And that's what I'd studied in undergrad. And his whole point was that words mean how they are used. And what's interesting is with computation today, you can actually reverse engineer what words mean through algorithms, how they're used in huge volumes of data. So it means you don't have to have a model. You don't have to know what you're looking for in advance to have a machine discover what the things mean. And so there's actually a Turing connection, which is out of the same family of ideas and the same pedigree of teachers came the technology that we have, which is about how do you take human language that's ambiguous, human language that is noisy, and not uniform and nothing like code, really, and turn it into something that's mathematically useful so you can supply it to the right needs.
That's the exact connection, I thought, the movie and you and big data and understanding it. Because he had big data back then, what with the Enigma machine, and he figured it out. Now, I don't want to talk about philology here or epistemology because we'll lose a lot of listeners.
That's right.
I want to talk about your company with two patents. That's what's interesting. You have two patents on this, huh?
Yeah, well, I think we're up to about seven now. So we got a notice of a new one coming out recently. I won't steal the press release or something, but we got a lot of them coming out. And I think that we started early in this, right? The original stuff we were filing was in 2002. So long before, big data and machine learning and the revival of AI and deep learning and all these topics were all exciting, we were kind of early on that. And it wasn't so much that we had all the answers by any means. It's been a humble journey to build a real full assembly and capability over a decade to make a unique outcome possible. So I think our journey is not the big epiphany that within a year the startup has all the answers. It's the sort of slugfest against the problem in data that I think a lot of our government customers have lived in, you know, pre-9/11 and definitely post-9/11. So we build identification with them, respecting the missions they have. And now, you know, we found other people had the same problem, like compliance people in banks. So we've found that the need to understand human language impacts intelligence, it impacts risk and compliance, it impacts all those things where there's an endless amount of things to review and read, but there's no more time being made. There's no more attention to add in. It's sliced too thin already.
You know, Bruce Springsteen said 500 channels and nothing to watch. You'd say 500 megabytes and megabits. How do we understand it all?
There's too much stuff to read, too many
channels to watch. I mean, how do you know what the best stuff is out there? Speaking of press releases, you've just hired a well-known federal person for your team. Is that right?
That's right. We basically brought on Kelly Collins, which we're very proud to have on our team and leading our government areas. And she's a huge addition, brings experience, really a ton of knowledge, especially in the cyberspace. We think the cyber area with this kind of data is huge, the risks that come out of it. And so she's really a contributor both as a leader in the team and also with deep expertise.
Well, I'll use a fancy word here. She has gravitas, huh?
Indeed.
That goes back to words and studying what words mean and everything else. But it's good to have real good people. I see your company growing and being active in a lot of different areas here. You know, 2 weeks ago, I had my buddy Mark Rylan on from Amazon Web Services.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you go to your website, which is digitalreasoning.com, lo and behold, you're working with AWS folks as well.
We are. We've been working with them now for several years, and there are definitely two big areas we're working on. One is we are in their marketplace on the Amazon Web Services sort of public available web version. We have a test drive ability. So for those that are intrigued about what they're hearing, there's an ability to actually go on and kick the software around and see it used and work on it there on a, you know, buy it by the hour basis. And then we've been involved fairly heavily on this new cloud that's being built for the Intel community called C2S. And we won't get into much of that in this context, but we are proud to be helping Amazon, to take their infrastructure capabilities and add to it killer applications that understand unstructured data, understand language information, to provide more value directly to that class of users in the intelligence community.
You know, what's so nice about Amazon Web Services is that it's like a utility, you know? It's like, you know, you don't always need that snow shovel, but, you know, maybe in February here in D.C., you might want to dust off the snow shovel and use it. And that's the same thing with products like Amazon Redshift and other products from Amazon. I don't need no stinking Redshift, 200 days a year, mm-hmm. but at tax time, you might need it, or at Katrina time, you may need it, or there is an event, you may need it for that. So it's almost like it's a service or a utility or something. Oh, yeah, let's turn it on now and turn it off.
Yeah, and it handles, I mean, those that are in the mission area know that, you know, a crisis hits. You know, it could be Ukraine, it could be something in the Arab Spring, and you have to go read a bunch of stuff, you know, at scale that maybe you didn't need to read, like Twitter or something, the same way, you know, the day before. So Amazon makes it possible, really for the first time, to just elastically, you know, add that capacity as you need it. And what we're working on is, that's great for infrastructure, what's the next layer? What people need is not just, you know, CPUs, they need algorithms that do work for them, because the CPUs don't do any work without algorithms on them.
Well, CPUs are fine, and so are snow shovels. But yep. Snow shovel's not going to help you in August, and a snow shovel's not going to help you if you're shoveling your neighbor's driveway.
Yeah.
You're not
going
to get your car out. So the algorithm helps structure what tools that Amazon can provide. I think that's kind of interesting. So Amazon Web Services and Digital Reasoning have partnered together to deliver the industry's most advanced analytics platform on as a cloud-based service. That's kind of interesting. In the cloud, huh? Not down the hall?
Yeah, well, we started off building our system so it could run on customer hardware, because we basically, like our government partners, are, you know, very concerned with data privacy and data security to make sure people have to go through the right authorizations, the right permissions, the right frameworks. So we really built our technology to be kind of their own private Google, for lack of a better term. They couldn't bring their data to the Googles of the world and put it on the web, and they won't be able to. But now with the Amazon deal, they're actually able to leverage the best in commercial industry to deliver the cloud capability. And so now what we're doing is we're saying, well, we can take the lessons learned in commercial around cloud and elasticity and provide them to the government customers. So you take an analytics piece that was built to run on private enterprises on very sensitive data. You put it on their private cloud with Amazon. Or if the data isn't highly sensitive, put it easily on the public cloud.
And there's your snowblower when you need it.
There it is. That's
reach
right.
in, take it out of the garage, right, and hope the pitchers and catchers report in 3 weeks, and you don't have to worry about snow anymore. Let's take a break. We come back, talk more about your company. I was at your website this morning. I thought it was very interesting, some of the things I saw there. And we'll talk more about digital reasoning. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Tim Estes, Chairman and CEO at Digital Reasoning. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Tim Estes. He's the chairman and CEO at Digital Reasoning. We're talking today about how to handle big data, how to make sense of all that stuff. I used a kind of an illustration of grabbing a tool out of a garage. But my garage right now is all full of stuff. I just moved. So my garage is all kinds of junk, and I don't even know what I have there. So I don't know what tool to pull, what not tool to pull. And I think a lot of people in the federal government, whether they work for Interior, whether they work for Commerce, or any of these agencies that have big information, trying to understand how to use it. And that's what digital reasoning is all about. Is that right, Tim?
Yeah, that's right. I think that there's a lot of talk around big data. There's now talk around this area called cognitive computing, which is sort of like the killer app of big data. How do you use big data processing like Hadoop with the right software, with analytics that are integrated together as a system that allow you to do something with it? Because the biggest issue on Hadoop right now is, what is the value of infrastructure without application?
I was at your website this morning, and it's a very unusual website. There's one of the guys there, he had a recommended reading list. Was it your president?
Yeah.
And said, well, geez, these guys do think, don't they? And he listed four books that might be interesting to read. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, there's numbers, and numbers are great. And, God knows I love my actuaries and the accountants, and I argue with software developers every single day of the week. But there's something to be said for putting words on paper and maybe having a cup of coffee and thinking about them, huh? And that's what analysis is.
That's right. That's right. It's at the end of the day, what you really want is you want something that can read, a machine that can read enough to be trusted to triage the overwhelming amount of data. I mean, over the last probably, at this juncture, 14, 15 years, the amount of data that people are exposed to has gone up well over 100-fold. So just putting that in perspective, if an analyst got something on the order of 10,000 new records in their inbox in the morning, looking at everything that they should read, that would mean that they're staring down a million things today.
Yeah, and in 24 hours. Yeah.
That's right. And the truth is that a person can probably only really dig in and read, maybe a couple hundred of those a given day if they're an expert, if they really are good at it. So you just think about what the actual amount of coverage is, and you're now well below 1% without a machine triaging it for you. So it's really that problem that's emerged of, okay, with the tools we had and with search and some of the advances over the last 10 years, being able to take, 10% of the data through search and get a pretty good answer. Well, now when you're dealing with less than 1% of the right data in front of you a day,
it
requires an absolutely different kind of solution that goes beyond search. And that's where this cognitive computing piece is coming from. It's really coming from, the data. It's funny in that the machine beating machine Turing kind of idea you brought up earlier. The analog today is that it's machines that made it so cheap to create information. And as a result, we have just landfills of data lying around everywhere. And now what you have to have is something that turns landfills into libraries. So that's organized, it's got the Dewey Decimal System on it, you know where to go pull it off the shelf. And once again, that's, I think, the real vacuum that we're coming in to fill, and someone's going to have to fill it. We'd like it to be us. We think we have a novel capability there. We think we have the proof of that. But the bottom line is that it has to be filled. This is not optional anymore.
Philosophy majors at UVA talk this way. They talk about a thesis, then an antithesis, and then a synthesis, don't they?
They do.
And ironically, your product is misspelled synthesis, huh?
It is. It is. It's amazing what you have to do when you have to trademark something. But yes. We're Nashville based, so we're an interesting company.
So you're allowed to misspell things?
Well, yeah. If it works for the lyric, if it creates a good hook, you can get away with anything.
So your product is called SYNTHESYS, synthesis.
That's right. And so, synthesis, we believe, sits at this critical middle juncture above the cloud eras and the infrastructure and the NoSQL storage engines that hold data. Those are all critical enablers. We couldn't do what we do without them. And there are all these great tools out there from i2 Analyst Notebook and Palantir and Tableau and others, a way that analysts will collaborate and work together. But without something that reads the, like it reads everything and creates the model from the data that makes it valuable, makes it make sense, those tools are overwhelmed by the data. And what ends up happening is it ends up being manual to go in, do search, rank, and read, and then manually extract. And so we're having people do the sign of things that we should know how to do in high school or below with 80% of their time instead of the kind of thinking that they really are capable of. Why? Because they're having to keep up with the deluge of data. So it's really about taking the 80% of time they're doing triage on now and move that into analytic time. So the machine can do the triage. The humans can tell you what the truth is because they're looking at better data and they're looking at it faster.
You know, Damon Davis from HHS, he runs the Idea Lab over there. He sat in that chair a few weeks back. Mm. And now this is a gentleman, by the way, who's getting deluged with data. This is, I'm sure people knock on his door saying, Damon, look, I've got all this genetic information, genome sequence. I've got all these healthcare records. And what do we do? And his challenge is to try to find companies that can help the government do just this. Look, healthcare, tons of data. Mm-hmm. Finance. Tons of data.
Yeah.
Intelligence, tons of data. Defense got tons. So it's just at a point where, how do you make sense of it?
Yeah. And it also, it speaks to why you have to take an approach to this problem that isn't specific to just one domain. So what came before us was a lot of systems that were based on knowledge and rules, ontologies, things where you had to have deep understanding of domain and you were coding in the system to just fit that domain. And what we brought to the problem was a system that could learn, that could be taught by example. We literally can teach the system a new language in 3 months with a handful of people providing examples. It's truly revolutionary that way. And that is critical if you're going to have this, you know, the same kind of engine look at, you know, pathology reports or look at radiology reports. Because you just give it different examples so that it's able to find the patterns of interest. Something that's a precursor to cancer, something that's an actual severe adverse effect coming out of a drug that wasn't known. So those kind of investigative pieces in the healthcare space, to use your HHS example, it's all viable when you have a software that can learn. And it really is key when you want to invest in something at an infrastructure level, because you don't know what the questions or the data will be tomorrow. And if you're buying for today with domain and rules and custom solutions and it doesn't learn, then you're locking yourself in to that investment today. And you're going to have to reinvest over and over again with every new domain, new type of data, new type of question that you want to ask.
Earlier, we talked about press releases and new hires. You also have a new hire who's a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
And you announced a partnership with Oracle.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, Oracle. I'm like, well, tell me about Oracle and you guys.
So Oracle, Oracle a few years ago acquired one of the absolute best hardware companies in the world in Sun Microsystems. I mean, that group had done large scale systems. One of the things that made big government able to deal with this data before cloud came along was the kind of systems that Sun, now Oracle, provided. And they have built among the very best fully integrated big data systems where you can roll in this appliance, a big data appliance. It's got Cloudera on it. It's got us on it. And so when you have people that want to do these applications and they don't want to do four acquisitions, hardware from this group, software over here, they want it to be simple and they want to have an answer soon, Oracle's a beautiful option. And so we've worked closely with them so we could tune the system to get very, very strong efficiencies on their hardware.
So this could be for organizations that really can't go to the cloud. Is that right?
Yeah, it's perfect for that. I mean, we may have a public cloud right now. And we have a top secret cloud with the C2S environment. There isn't a secret cloud right now that is production. And so all the warfighters are on the SIPR side. And so it's a beautiful solution for people that are, you know, in the DoD domain or have other privacy concerns that haven't gotten onto the Amazon side yet. So I think those two domains are an ideal solution for Oracle rolling in a box with our stuff on it in terms of just time to value.
We were joking about philosophers and language usage and everything else. In my world, software developers, they talk about use cases. And in your world, you talk about key risk indicators and proactive use cases. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that linguists out there will go, no, you're not using that phrase correctly or not. So what is a proactive use case?
Yeah. Well, I think that so in this market, let me give you a very straightforward example. So in the last 5 or 6 years in the legal market, the e-discovery space, the ability to leverage high-end search engines to tell you what documents are relevant in a legal case, there was a capability called predictive coding that'll let you give examples to a system, and it volunteer back documents, because when you do these big legal cases or investigations, you had to supply these documents. Yeah. Well, that's great after you've been sued or after you have a breach. It's reactive. So the most progressive customers like Goldman Sachs and others that have invested in us, they thought there was a better answer, which was to get ahead of the problem and to be able to find risk indicators up front. And that's what proactive compliance is.
Let's take a break, come back, talk more about compliance and proactive use cases, and talk more about efficiently using big data that you have all around you. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Tim Estes, Chairman and CEO at Digital Reasoning. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Tim Estes, Chairman and CEO at Digital Reasoning. And today we're trying to put our arms around big data. And okay, we got big data here. We've got Cloudera, you know, and using Impala and just giving us all this stuff. And at the other part of the table, we have Tableau making us do something with it. But there's got to be some kind of a person in between. You know, there's like a relay man and a double play. You have to have that relay man. And that's, you know, hey, we're the relay man, huh? Is that what you guys do?
Yeah, well, I think at the end of the day, you have to have something that, think of it like a refinery. You know, you can have crude oil. Big data. And you can have the desired outcome, which is tires and gasoline. But without a refinery that can turn that raw material into something that's valuable by, you know, cooking it through analytics to different temperatures, you never get the products because you can't put crude oil directly in the car. And I think that's where we come in is, you know, it's great to show a car and demo the car, but where did the crude oil come from? If it's from people like manually cooking the thing, it's a lot different than a real refinery. So Digital Reasoning's analog in that piece is probably a refinery.
A lot of people are on Twitter and get information from Twitter. If you want to follow me, I am at Ray Gilray, and your company is at D Reasoning. Is that correct?
That's right.
Follow D Reasoning, get all kinds of updates. And yes, I was up real early this morning, and I reviewed all of your tweets for the last year. And I saw a hashtag Fin, F-I-N-S-E-R-V. So mm-hmm. Tell me about FinServe.
So we built this for the intelligence community and its mission. We did it because, you know, like many in our country, we were trying to help solve a problem after 9/11, and we still are deeply dedicated to that. It had other uses that were really interesting. We realized that if we applied this to things like email inside big banks, we could probably catch insider traders. And that's what we were able to prove out with people like Goldman and others. So that is the FinServe hashtag. It really is that all these companies, and this is true not just of banks, it's true of all corporations, and it's actually true of government with their compliance needs. There is all this communication going on networks. And in that communication are a lot of risks, things people say, things people do. And the group that supplies the network actually has liability unless they put something that's almost like content antivirus, the ability to have a system read and scan these things and say, that's sexual harassment. You can't say that. Or say, this person is giving confidential information to a third party they shouldn't be able to.
This is the exact problem Twitter has right now with mm-hmm. harassment, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, how do you control? We just talked about Twitter, you know, in an offhand way, but, you know, what's happening is women are getting harassed on Twitter. And Twitter has to control that somehow. And I know in the Valley they talk about, well, we don't want to do any, but they don't know how to handle it.
Yeah. I mean, the CEO had to apologize for that, right? I mean, that was a recent story.
A strong apology. He used some strong words.
Yeah. It was.
He said, we suck.
prostrate before, you know, the shareholders. It was rough.
I
think this is just, to me, that's the tip of the iceberg, but it's a great example because it's so public, is that when you make it so easy to communicate, people will start communicating quickly and not thoughtfully. And that creates risk. It creates problems. And there's no break. You know, you have friends in your life, and it could even be family members. You say, well, that person has no filter. You know, they'll embarrass you and whatnot. You know, everybody has a relative that that's true of. Well, where is the filter in these companies? And I think companies are starting to realize, wow, this is creating real liability for us. It's creating liability, like fundamental liability, like we're breaking the law or breaking a regulation. Or it's creating real customer liability. Wow, this person had a bad day and they said this is a customer and we lost them for life.
It's with Twitter, it's right in front of everyone's eyes.
That's right.
With a large bank, it is behind a little wall there, but it's still happening.
It is, but the $1 billion fines that they've been hit with over the last couple of years because this kind of behavior means that they're taking it deadly seriously. And they're innovating. They're not just saying, here's a good enough solution for compliance. The really good ones, the really high-end banks, are coming up with a better answer and showing that to the regulators now instead of reacting to those things.
And that word's with a B. The fine is with a B. And
yeah,
I've read about
billions.
Those fines.
These are not small things. These can be the entire profits of a whole business unit. I mean, it's massive.
Yeah, I teach my students to have a social media policy. And those nice three easy words to throw out there. And I can also say, hit 400 in the big leagues. Well, that's easy. Just hit home runs. I mean, but social media policy, easy to say, hard to deploy, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the policy for a for-profit company? And then what about my listeners? I mean, 135 agencies. Every single agency is a different flavor, different way of doing things. You got FEMA, the people all over the country. You have other organizations that many of the people are behind a firewall somewhere. Medical situation. Finance. You know, we can talk about finance in the federal government all day long and some of the issues that they have, can't we?
That's right. And I think the undercurrent here really is that people understand the policy in some cases of what they should or shouldn't be doing, and then they're surprised when people don't conform to the policy. But that's human nature, right? To do things the way they want to do it. What's missing is the partnership with technology. So policy and technology have to work together, and then it actually gives you the requirements of that technology. Because if you have policies that are both changing, evolving, that are diverse, a technology has to be flexible. Which means ultimately, if you really dig in, it's got to be based on machine learning. It's got to be based on something that can be taught, not something that has to be custom programmed for every single domain. Once again, leading back to cognitive computing, that's why it is the paradigm shift. It's basically where things are going because it has to go there.
You know, cognitive computing, paradigm shift, all kinds of fancy pants words. When I studied your company, I took some notes and I try to summarize things in easy, simple words that, you know, I'm in a taxi cab or I'm sitting at a bus stop I can talk to someone with. And here's the words that summarize your company. Help people make better decisions. I think that's it. I mean, fancy words, but, you know, a lot of people are real smart and they get a lot of information in front of them. And what is a tool that they can use to help make better decisions? And this is one tool that's out there they should probably consider.
Well, the people that are drowning in data, I remember that infomercial a few years ago, the Stop the Insanity woman, if you remember this, that had the exercise videos. And you feel like there's an insanity that's expected with the data overload, especially on analysts and the government mission and the compliance people. And they just can't win now without something that really creates, you know, that decision support system that reads like they read.
And if you work for Dunkin' Donuts, you're trying to find out if your franchise is an Iowa profitable. I mean, that's a 9-to-5 job. But my listeners, you know, they're my listeners who listen to the show that are responsible for human lives.
That's right. Yep.
And they really can't afford to not ship the maple donuts to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And then they get a bad performance review. People die. It's like, okay, you can be silly and talk about John's Donut Shop. But really, I mean, I know a lot of govies out there. I live next door to a couple, and they're really, really serious about this. And they do want to help make better decisions, especially if the decisions involve sound so serious here, but humans, and they do.
Yeah, that's right.
So with this hashtag HUMINT, human intelligence, is that what this, another something with digital reasoning, is it a wrong hashtag I've been following here?
Well, I think that one is really about how do you bridge systems that are dealing in human language, and how do you turn it into a connected set of things that can be used in tools? And I bring it up to tools because tools allow you to look beyond a document. Allow you to see connections that aren't visible just by reading. It's the kind of thing people put a lot of manual effort into. So in that area with human intelligence, communications intelligence, e-communications, those areas, we just right now are still living in a totally search-centric world, a world that was built to give you which one of the top three flights to LA you can possibly look at of 50 options. A person that has to make a very certain life and death decision like you're alluding to, John, they don't want an approximate answer where, you know, it's one of four possibilities and anyone's just as good. No, One answer is, this is the bad guy, we need to deal with them. The other answer is, we think a bad guy is a bad guy, and they're really a good guy, and we need to deal with that as soon as possible so people are protected. This is life and death stuff. So it requires a comprehensive analytic and not a simple search analytic.
And search is hot, search is popular. We can talk about hours for search. I read your blog post from over the summer, and you talked about the age of cognitive computing, and you said, well, today we're really in the pre-iPod age. That's kind of an interesting concept there. I just finished Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs. I waited to read it because I want to put it in perspective. Let's take a break. Come back, talk more about the pre-iPod age of cognitive computing and where it's heading and whether it's good or bad for us mere humans here. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Tim Estes, Chairman and CEO at Digital Reasoning. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Tim Estes. He's Chairman and CEO at Digital Reasoning. Lo and behold, you can find him at digitalreasoning.com.
Imagine that, John.
Imagine that of all the things. We're talking about how the heck to handle all this big data you have and how to make sense of all the stuff that's there. And we went back and forth and we talked about hashtags and Twitter and we talked about blogs. Some people read blogs. My blog is a Tech Tuesday blog. I also blog for several other companies in town. We talked about a blog post that Tim had over the summer. Do you write a blog? Can you recommend a blog that my listeners can read to keep up with this topic?
Well, I'll post entries on our blog and our website on occasion. I don't do it that often, but there are a few topics, I love to get into, probably. I've been thinking a lot about one about the future of AI. There's been a lot of debate about it between Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk and Bill Gates. And I think there's a lot of really important issues being debated there. And, now we have a spot that Google dropped on the world yesterday through Boston Dynamics, this little, dog that's a robot that can run around and do pretty interesting things. And so I think there's just a lot of it's interesting. People can be pursuing an end goal and I think become completely enamored with it and then rationalize every means to get there. And I think that's the great danger in that space. So I might write something up on that pretty soon here on the company's blog. I end up, reading like Read Write Web, which is a great site to keep current on, probably your readers too. Some of the basics like CNET, which I've probably been reading since I was, 20 or 15 even. I think they probably got founded when I was like 17.
You have letter C, CNET.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's, some of the basics out there, The Verge. So there's some good pieces out there.
Great. A lot of people listening to these interviews and when I started doing these shows, people would say, wow, he's a security guy. What kind of phone does he have? Or, wow, I wonder what kind of phone Tim has. And so I've come up with a scientific 10-question test, Tim. And we're going to find out if you're, in fact, a card-carrying nerd or not. So, first question on this. So, we break into your house. How many old-school desktops do we have sitting around your house?
Old-school desktops?
A regular desktop?
Yeah. I think that I have cleaned them all out. Mm-hmm. I think I have one or two MacBook Pros still sitting around that may have not been opened in some time.
Okay.
But
the number of cell phones you've purchased for yourself in the last year?
Just one.
Just one. Okay, so at least not compulsive there. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do.
T-W-E-S-T-E-S, is that
you? Yes, great, yes. Great. And so it's, I'll occasionally talk on some work-related things, but some personal things.
Do you have a personal blog?
No.
Okay. What flavor smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone 5S.
Mm-hmm. What's the most popular app on that phone in the last 30 days?
Probably Yelp.
Hmm. Okay. How many tablet devices do we have in your house?
Three.
What was your most recent post in social networks?
Well, I'm not actually on Facebook. I'm like the one that's left in the country. and I'm probably something I put on Twitter, but I don't tweet that often either. I honestly, I look at social media as, a fire hose of not very well filtered things. And therefore, I don't know that the time investment, I don't feel like it's quite as much. I have a great network of people that I...
Human beings, get out of here.
Yes, human intelligence.
No
way. Human intelligence meaning people that are experts that give me, good ideas and that are filtering.
I wouldn't trust those humans.
And what I look forward to is the day when, our own, eating our own dog food, Digital Reasoning is doing great consumption of social media, which will probably in a future not too long from now. And then I can trust Synthesis to go, take the fire hose on and be able to tell me something that's worth the time to invest. Because right now, I don't put a lot of time into it.
Make it a drinking fountain, yeah.
That's right.
And do you have a mobile fitness device on your body anywhere? Wrist thing or anything?
I don't, but I have apps that are tied in to the gyroscope of the iPhone. So
I see, in the last 18 months, I see that answer more and more. Instead of here's my Fitbit, to no, it's on my phone. That's interesting.
Yep.
Last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
Electronic.
That's interesting. We'll have to grade this on my computer in my basement and send you out something in my green bar to find out if, in fact, a card-carrying nerd or not. Well, you've seen a lot of things happen the last decade as far as computational power, move to the cloud, mobile devices, all kinds of sensors getting information. Well, what's going to happen here in the next 5 to 7 years? What's going to happen with this whole idea of analytics? Is it going to take us down the wrong path, like Bill Gates says, or is it going to take us down the right path? Should we be wary? Or what about all this predictive analytics you're talking about?
Well, I mean, I think let me split the question. One side of it, I think, is for the customers and the people in the government market that we're dealing with, I think there is a revolutionary potential with the cloud to accelerate value from technology. I think the year-long processes of acquiring hardware, of getting it installed, getting people writing custom code on it, and a lot of people and bodies, I think that's going to give way over the next 4 or 5 years to things that come and get rented on the cloud. I believe that evangelism is gospel. And it will play out. I think with Amazon, for instance, competing against the integrators in some ways on this, I know where my bet is going. Now, I think some really smart integrators are going to jump on that. They're going to get ahead of the game. And they're going to realize that their domain expertise is a critical value if they partner with commercial industry. So I think that's what I'm looking for. And I think there's just no reason we should spend 10 times more than the next guy and get twice the value instead of spending 8 times more than the next guy and getting 8 times the value. Like, that wouldn't be tolerated in commercial industry. And I think all the progressive and intelligent people in IT I deal with in the federal government have the same frustration on that. So I think cloud is a vehicle. And analytics, as we talked through basically in the other segments, analytics is not a nice to have. It is a necessity in an overwhelming big data world. So that's sort of, I think, the industry side of it and the government side of it. Now, the personal side of it is we have, in order to get to analytics, we have bought into a model where you get software that's good sometimes very mediocre, different social networks, and you trade your data to them for a, quote, free service, which means you become the product. I think there eventually will be a revulsion against that kind of aggregator-centric model. And I think of an iPhone that's got 128 or 256 cores on it 5 years from now. I don't know why the iPhone of the future can't read the part of the web that you care about every single day in real time over a 4G++ or 5G network and do that for you, and you don't need Google anymore the way you do today. I think that's a future that I hope comes to pass. And when I talk about in the blog about the iPod, pre-iPod age of cognitive computing, that's what I mean. There's going to be a whole knowledge graph of the internet for you in your pocket at some point in the next 5 or 6 years. And I think that's a much better, much more American democratic way than kind of a digital communism of put all the data in one place and one group tells you what the truth is. And so I'm kind of, rah-rah pro-American, let's empower every individual. And I think that's actually safer than one big cognitive brain that's an AI telling us what the truth is, too. So I think it's actually intertwined with the Bill Gates concerns and Elon Musk concerns. Having a democratized AI model that's distributed is fundamentally safer than one that is centralized in a handful of very, very big companies that have all the data and control how you're viewed online, which is just absolutely pivotal to people's lives now, to kids' lives, to people trying to get jobs after high school or after college, people's reputations, they apply to companies. These companies that aggregate data control your future now, and I think it needs to be undone. So there's my rant, my one on the soapbox thing for you, John.
Last night, I was listening to an interview with the D.C. police chief. Her name's Kathy, and she talked about she never takes vacations. She's always on the phone. And I'm thinking that this is a woman who runs the police here in Washington, D.C., and she has to be on 24 hours a day. Well maybe if there was some kind of a filter in there that gave her the information that she needed to know, she wouldn't have to. Maybe she could go bowling or, I don't know, go to the beach or do something that would free her up from 24 hours a day. I can't take a break because everything, guess what? Everything is not important. If some things are important, there's got to be a filter there somewhere. Maybe your product can help with that.
That's right. I mean, what I want us to get back to, and this is my nostalgia, and being a Southern boy, you know, from Nashville, you know, I want to see people have the time and freedom to have more investment in their key relationships, you know, embodied relationships where they spend time with people, their families, where they don't have to be always on because something is trusted that's taking my time and treating it as valuable. And I feel we've been put directly against the fire hose, and that can't be the way it was meant to be.
Maybe Kathleen and Eric can take time and go see the Old Crow Medicine Show. What do you think?
That's right. Absolutely. Amen to that.
She's a interesting person. I don't know if you know who she is, but she is a woman riding herd of a very, very sensitive area where she's got responsibilities that include Capitol Hill and Congress and the city here. And it was an interesting interview, and I never thought of all that information she gets, but she talked about it. She says, I'm always with it 24 hours a day. It's almost like attached to her hand, and that's just no way for human beings to live, I don't think. And maybe the answer is filtering some of this intelligence.
The iPod of cognitive computing.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your time here, Tim. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Tim Estes, Chairman and CEO at Digital Reasoning.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.